Have you ever just wanted a fresh start, a do-over to say, you know what, I need to reset things a bit? Now, for most of us, we have that attitude around New Year's, want to do a New Year's resolution, want a fresh start at the year. But for other people, they go a bit too far at the idea of a fresh start, and they fake their own deaths in order to start a new life. But for many people who choose to do that, it tends to not work out as well for them. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Trent Horn. Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology. But on Friday, FFAF, Free For All Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today I want to talk about the world of death fraud, the world of pseudocide. There's a 2016 book about this by Elizabeth Greenwood called Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud, aka, you know, it's also called suicide. That's when you actually do take your own life. Pseudocide is when you make people think you've either taken your own life. Well, usually, though, when people commit pseudocide, they don't want people to think that they've committed a suicide because they're involved in things like life insurance fraud. They just want people to think that they usually have been the victim of some kind of a tragic accident and they're now dead and the world should move on without them because they want to move on to start a new life under a new alias. And there's so many facets that go into that. So I have a review here, a review in the New York Times of Greenwood's book. I was going to read some of it to you and also share some of the other details that go into the world of pseudocide. So the review says, "How did I end up sweating in the back seat of a Mercedes in the Philippines, driving to obtain evidence of my own death?" Elizabeth Greenwood teases us in the introduction to her book, Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud. She was 27 at the time in 2013, and saddled with compounding student debt. From that coy introduction, Miss Greenwood leaps into an anecdote-filled history of and rough primer for erasing yourself. She shrewdly notes that our fascination with vanishing is only heightened by the hypervisibility of our age. Is it even possible to disappear anymore, she wonders, when every move is monitored, if not by the National Security Agency, then by closed-circuit TVs, drones, phones transmitting our coordinates, and obnoxious friends tagging us on Facebook. So, right. When it comes to faking your own death, I mean, you know, 50 years ago, when people didn't have any kind of background checks or anything like that, you could just show up in a brand new town, say, "Yeah, I'm John Smith. Of course, here's my identification right here. Oh, I lost my identification. Can I get some new ones right here?" It'd be the drifter that shows up into town or whatever it may be. And you could even just go away just a few miles, maybe a few hundred miles, and no one would be the wiser. A few hundred miles might even be the equivalent of a few thousand miles or going to a new country because people weren't connected. But now we're hyper-connected through the internet, through social media. It's a lot more difficult to do that. So Greenwood in the book goes through all the different ways that people commit pseudocide and the reasons for it. She says that typically pseudocide is a male phenomena, that it's something that men tend to do far more often than women. And the reasons, usually when men fake their own deaths, it's because they have money problems. When women fake their own deaths, it's because they have man problems, usually trying to get away from a violent or abusive spouse, and so they change their own identity. And then the review here goes on to say, to test the waters, she consults with a privacy consultant named Frank Ahern. Frank is in his 50s and resembles a Hell's Angel. She writes, the word freedom is tattooed across his broad shoulders, and he uses profanity in a way that borders on Zen poetry. Mr. Ahern tells her that he helps people disappear, not fake death, and that the distinction is crucial. It's illegal to file any official paperwork about your fabricated death, but it's perfectly legal, if difficult, to disappear. And that's something a lot of people don't know about pseudocide, is that it's legal in most cases to walk away from your life and disappear, and people just don't know what happened to you. So it's legal to do that, but when you try to fake your own death, you end up committing illegal activities fairly quickly. You know, if you try to create a new identity, for example, you're going to end up committing identity fraud. If you try to create a person who never existed or take a dead person's identity and assume it as your own, if you try to get a lease, you try to get even like a rental agreement, try to buy an asset like a car, try to get a credit card, you're going to end up committing identity fraud. If you're trying to live a life in a first world country and trying to fake your own death. That's why in Greenwood's book, she says, if you really do want to fake your own death and assume a new identity, you really should go to more of a developing country or one that has pretty lax identification requirements and a country where the American dollar goes a lot further. So if you were trying to fake your own death and just walk away from your life, let's say you've saved up, you know, $50,000 in cash, you're not going to go very far if you try to create a new identity here in the U.S. or even in most European nations. So she says one of the most popular countries that people disappear off to would be Thailand. You go there, American Westerners, they're at least not despised, not looked down upon in that country. And American dollars can go pretty far in Thailand. And it's not that hard for you to create a new identity, get some kind of a menial job or even some job that's like of decent working quality and just pick that up because of the lax standards there. But trying to start a new job and a new life in America, in the US or in England, it's going to be a lot more difficult. So, and when it comes to the illegal aspects, the other illegal aspect, of course, is life insurance. If you fake your own death and then your life insurance is paid out to a beneficiary and then you get a hold of the money, well, then now you've committed insurance fraud, and you can definitely go to prison for a decent while for that. So the article goes on to say, one investigator calls staged deaths an outlier in the insurance fraud game, making up maybe 1% of the cases. Ms. Greenwood's research reveals that death fraud is a heavily male phenomenon. As I said earlier, men looking to disappear tend to have money problems. When it's women, they tend to have violent man problems. So some of the fundamental tasks on the offing yourself checklist are more easily accomplished than you might think. For instance, producing a body. So what Greenwood says in the book is that the number one way people will go about trying to fake their own death is large open bodies of water. To say, oh, what happened to them? Oh, I died when I was out on my boat and fell overboard, and you leave the boat out there and people find it and you're not on the boat. I guess he must have fell overboard and quiet, tranquil waters, and he couldn't get back on the boat. Well, how could that have happened? Or people make it look like that you went swimming or kayaking. That's an example that we'll share here shortly, and that you've disappeared in a large body of water, and the body's not going to be found. Greenwood says that's actually a terrible idea. If you're going to fake your own death, don't do large open bodies of water. Because people are insurance. There's two people looking for you. The police will be looking for you, especially if you disappear and you're going to be arrested for a crime. Samuel Israel III, he was a hedge fund manager who was convicted of a crime. He then parked his car on a bridge, wrote "Suicide is Beautiful" in the dust on the car, which is, I think, the theme song from MASH. Jumps over the bridge, lands in construction nets under it. And then was found hiding in an RV a few weeks later. Because even if he jumped off a bridge and landed in a river, well, usually the body is going to wash up at some point. Or if you disappear in a bay or even out at sea, the investigators know where the currents are going. Usually a body ends up being discovered. Or people they're just naturally suspicious of it, whether it is the police or looking for you because you disappeared before you're supposed to go to prison. Or life insurance investigators, that life insurance policies will usually delay paying out if no body can be produced. And so they're going to wait to see if this is a suspicious circumstance or not. Now, the only other case where you can get away with a faked death without a body is if you're able to realistically tie your faked death to a large disaster. So for example, in the September 11th attacks, the collapse of the World Trade Center, there were people who used insurance fraud to say they had actually died in the attacks, or made up fake identities of people who never existed, say that they died in the attacks. Though there's another case actually of a woman who claimed to have been a survivor, someone who was in the towers and lived, and she was never actually there. She's just some random woman from Spain with this story. So in disasters, there's these fake stories that can emerge. And when you have, what would it be? Millions of tons of concrete and steel coming down, at least hundreds of thousands, not millions of tons coming down on someone, a lot of those bodies are just never going to be recovered. And so if you can realistically tie yourself that you were there in that situation, that's one way. But most people, when they decide they want to commit pseudocide, are not in that situation. So they pick large open bodies of water. People get suspicious. But according to the article, you can actually find a corpse and pay money in developing nations, people to say that that's you, it's not as much trouble as you might think. So the article says, a relatively robust number of morgues are in the sales business, especially in places where corpse security is a low priority. Steve Rambam, a fraud investigator, is quoted as saying, you can just go into any city morgue in almost any developing country, ask to see the unclaimed bodies and cry, oh, it's poor Uncle Marco. They'll be happy to get a body off their hands. So if you go to a developing country, it's not as hard to find a body to produce it. But I think many people here in the U.S. will take the disappearance by water route, and also in Europe as well, when people are doing this. The book covers probably one of the most famous cases, especially if you're from England, you would remember this, would be the case of John Darwin, who is presumed dead in 2002. Then was later discovered and arrested by UK authorities in 2007 for faking his own death in order to commit insurance fraud. So I'll read to you a little bit about that case, because it pulls a lot of the threads together, including the common mistakes that people make and how people get caught. Even if you do convince people that you've died and the life insurance money is paid out, you're always on the run. You're always in a situation where people, you risk being discovered. You risk people finding you, that if the investigators, what they'll say, the life insurance investigators and the police will say, we can make as many mistakes as we want. You only have to make one mistake, the guy who's on the run, and we could find you. So the only way to successfully fake your own death is to follow the protocols of something like witness protection, you know, the witness protection program the U.S. Marshals put on. If you're testifying against the mob and you have to disappear so they don't find you. Now, no one in witness protection has ever, who has abided by the protocols of the program, has ever died. They have 100% record of that. But they're very clear. You know, when you have a new identity, you can't, where their ironclad rule is, you cannot contact people of your old life. Can't go back and eat at your old favorite restaurant. Can't go see old friends. Can't go see old family, because you're just going to end up being discovered and found out. You just can't do that. So, but that's how people, when they do disappear, that longing for their old life or that morbid curiosity of what it was like, it just gets the better of them. In fact, there was a guy in Belgium. He faked his own death just to see who would show up at his funeral. And he arrived at the funeral in a helicopter to see who cared enough about him to show up at his funeral. So it ends up getting the best of you. So here's what happened with Darwin, the Darwin case. In 2002, let me see, I have the article here. He was paddling out to sea at Seton Carew. That's a resort in Durham in England. This is, you know, along the North Sea. And he's paddling out into it, and then he didn't come back, and he was reported missing after failing to report to work. A large scale sea search was undertaken. About 62 square miles of coastline were searched. No sign of Darwin, but then they found his paddle and the wreckage of his kayak, but they did not find his body. And there already is a little bit of suspicion here, because the investigator said the North Sea was very calm when he went out. They don't know why he would have gotten into so much trouble and died. And also, if the kayak was discovered on the coast, why wasn't the body discovered as well, or elements of the body? So there were these suspicions, but not enough to really nail down that something had happened. So eventually a death certificate was issued for him. And then in 2003, his wife was awarded a £250,000 life insurance policy. So during that time, before the policy came out, Darwin was actually in a rented room next door to his old house. I think there might even been like a hole in the wall for him to be able to go from the rented room back into the house. Though I don't know why he had to be in the rented room. I guess he didn't want to be in the house because the people are coming over, investigators, others. You know, you don't want to be at the house and wife's friends come over and they see that you're there. But he was able to go from the bed. It was called a bedsit, a rented room in England, to go back over into the house. And then eventually he fully moved back into the old house after they got the insurance money. And then he got a passport and got a fake identity, John Jones. They do say, by the way, if you fake your own death, or also even if you do witness protection, keep your first name. You spent your whole life responding to it, so you might as well keep your first name, unless it's a really, really unique first name. Keep your first name, change your last name. And so he picked John Jones. Oh, well, might as well pick John Smith. How much of a nondescript I'm trying to hide my identity name is that? Sorry for any John Joneses who are listening to the podcast. But they go, and then he traveled around, and they were using the money. They were planning to try to find a new life. And that's when they started looking at Panama. So they went to Panama to start a company there and rent out properties. And he was with a Panamanian real estate agent who took a photograph of the two of them, John and his wife, which was later put up on the internet. And that evidence later came back to haunt him when the authorities got more and more suspicious and then were mounting a case against him. So in doing that, his wife became an object of suspicion, because she's supposed to be this grieving widow, but she's selling her home, moving to Panama, going on foreign holidays, as they call vacations in England. I'm going on holiday. And one of her coworkers, so Anne, his wife, a coworker of hers, heard her on the phone talking to John, her husband, who's supposed to be dead. And that's where the suspicion, though somebody actually saw him before that point when he was in the rented room. And that was back in like 2003. A guy said, "Oi, aren't you supposed to be dead?" And then he tells him, "Don't tell anyone about this." And the guy said he didn't want to the police because he didn't want to get involved. So when you go back to your old life, you're going to end up getting caught. Or it's just so easy for something you do. There was another case of a guy. He had faked his own death, but then he was involved in some kind of local art show or a contest. And he was pictures taken of him. It was put online. His relatives who thought he was dead see it when they were Googling about him and the hobbies he used to do. So the internet, it scoops you up. It's very hard to get away from it. So then when he was in Panama, his wife booked him an airline ticket to go back to England because he missed his sons. Once again, when you miss your old life, that's what ensnares you. But they changed the Panamanian visas to require identity verification. And Darwin knew he was going to be found out because, you know, he had a fake identity, just John Jones. So he returned to England, went to the police station, and he claimed that he had amnesia for the past 5 years. And he just got his memory back and had no idea what happened. Of course, they didn't buy that for a second because they had now all of this evidence to show he was in cahoots with his wife. They had been traveling together. And so it's a very interesting case. And then I think he and his wife ended up getting, I think it was like 6 years in prison because of that. So yeah, so that's some of the elements of pseudocide. I can't remember if I said this earlier or because I actually recorded this episode before and the audio got completely messed up. So I apologize if I'm repeating myself here because this is my second recording of it. But if you really did want to disappear, it's very hard to do in the States. You need to go to a developing country like Thailand is probably one of the most popular ones that people pick because you can go there, you can assume a new identity very easily, get a job, even a decent job. And they don't really look down on Americans as much in Thailand. And if you've already saved up a lot of money here in the States and you want to disappear, your money can go a lot further there than it would in other countries, which is probably why the Darwins were looking at a country like Panama. So Latin America, Southeast Asia are very popular destinations for those who just want to disappear. But if you are thinking of disappearing, don't do that. I mean, I'm sure that the problems in your life are not as bad as you think they are. And also, if you're thinking of doing it, odds are you'll probably, especially if you're trying to fake your own death and commit identity or insurance fraud, you'll probably be found out and make things just that much worse for you. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.